Sitting alongside I-95 and the Lumber River south of Fayetteville is North Carolina's outlier county. It's one of the most diverse, also among the poorest. But like the state as a whole, Robeson County is purple. And both presidential candidates are doubling down on their efforts to take the county. Donald Trump held a rally at the fairgrounds last Saturday. Both presidential candidates, as well as the congressional candidates for the 9th District, now promise federal recognition for the Lumbee tribe. WUNC's digital producer Laura Pelliser talked to folks in Robeson County about all this extra attention. Hello, Laura.
Hi, Frank.
Tell us what the significance of federal recognition. We'll talk about this one promise first and then kind of take a look at some of the larger scope that you did on your web build-out, which, by the way, I recommend that you go to WUNC.org and take a look at the beautiful build-out and the much more detailed story that you tell. But let's focus on this promise for federal recognition and the significance of that for the Lumbee tribe.
Yeah, well, federal recognition is something that full federal recognition, I should say, is something that the Lumbee tribe has been vying for over a century. So this is not the first time that folks in this community have heard promises from politicians that the full federal recognition is on its way. They essentially got partial federal recognition back in the 1800s. But to get full federal recognition, that essentially means that you have access to a large pot of federal funding, millions in this case, that can essentially really help support the tribe. It also, as you know, means that you have the possibility of setting up a casino should your tribe decide to do so. And tribal chairman Harvey Godwin says that, you know, if they did get full federal recognition or when they do, that the tribal vote, they will take a referendum vote to decide whether to build a casino or not.
And of course, tribal recognition, not the only issue that all of these candidates have weighed in on. And you drove to Pembroke this week to hear from folks about all this extra attention. What are they saying?
Yeah, so I spent some time, I was in rural Robeson County, and then I also was sort of driving through Pembroke and spoke with a couple people. And I think it was really interesting, actually, to hear from folks, because there was some level of excitement over the recent attention that politicians have been bestowing upon Robeson County, and really specifically, they've been homing in on the Lumbee tribe. But so much skepticism, Frank. There was a lot of skepticism from the people I spoke with. You know, what comes to mind is one of the first folks that I spoke with is a first-time voter. His name is John Lakota Locklear, and he's 23 years old, so he's pretty young. He'll be going to the polls for the first time this year. And he told me that he has sort of these flashbacks, these memories of every 4 to 8 years seeing this kind of attention, you know, on the Lumbee tribe. And so he said that he's really trying not to vote with his heart. He's trying to vote with his head. He's not trying to be swayed by all the recent political attention, because it really has come in the final weeks before the election. You know, this is a very last minute push. And folks who have been vying for full federal recognition for the Lumbee tribe say that, you know, this is a little too late to be sort of highlighting this effort.
And some of the other issues around that are, you know, folks are facing in that county, and skepticism, of course, understandable, especially if you think about all of the disaster aid that has and has not come to the area. FEMA money has been slow to flow into the areas affected by hurricanes Florence and Matthew, for instance. And as a result of that neglect, a lot of people have picked up and left, leaving behind their flooded houses. And I know that you spoke with Lumberton residents about those lasting effects and the choice to either rebuild or start over elsewhere. Here's Billy Thompson talking about her mother's decision.
I might say you don't need to go back, but that's her decision. This is what she want to do. And, you know, it's home. You can't just, you know, saying it's home. So I feel like some people probably do want to come back, but just can't come back because they don't have anything to come back to, you know, like a house or whatever the case may be. But this is home. To me, it's home, regardless of how bad it looks or, how, you know, how bad it gets. This is still going to be home for me.
That's Billy Thompson talking about her family neighborhood in Lumberton. And Laura, although her mother is still there, Billy did choose to move to Rayford, about 40 miles away. How did she talk about the difference in her family's decision-making, how they made those decisions? Some stay, some leave.
I mean, there was nothing easy about making this decision for Billy Thompson. She describes South Lumberton, where she grew up, and the street where she was raised, or partially raised, as Spearman Street. She describes those places as home. So she, you know, she calls that neighborhood home, and even though she's moved to Rayford, I think she's still kind of using that language. And essentially what happened is that she has a young daughter, 12-year-old Dejanay, and after Hurricane Matthew, Dejanay was in third grade at the time, and she was out of school. She was not able to go back to her school for weeks. I spoke with Dejanay herself, and she said, you know, at first it was exciting and it was fun for her and her friends. And after a while, you know, she was still out of school and it started to become a little bit more stressful. And so this is this part of the story that's happened to a lot of people in Lumberton. You know, the school was sort of one of the first reasons why Billy decided to move. The school was closed, but also Billy's home that she was renting at the time got flooded. Her mother's home was flooded. You know, her grandmother got flooded out. And so many folks had to leave temporarily. And in that temporary move, they also sort of made some tough decisions about, is this the right place for me to move back to? Is this a safe place? Do I have support in my neighborhood? Can I rebuild my home? Can I make it, you know, flood, put in the right measures to mitigate the next big flood and keep my family safe?
Well, and we've talked about the diversity of Robeson County as well. 35% Black, 13% American Indian, 9% Hispanic. And of course, the issue of flooding is important. It came up over and over again for you, and out migration. But does it affect everyone equally in Lumberton?
No, it's pretty stark, actually, the differences between neighborhoods and sort of how the city is laid out. So if you can sort of imagine that the Lumber River, which is this really beautiful Blackwater River, it flows right through sort of downtown Lumberton, right through the middle of the city. And on the west side of that river, it's bordered by a levee, sort of an earthen levee that then becomes like a metal structure that runs under the highway. And that levee protects two specific neighborhoods. It's meant to protect the south and the west neighborhoods of Lumberton. Those neighborhoods are significantly lower, topographically lower than the north and east sides of Lumberton. And those neighborhoods, south and west Lumberton, also happen to be significantly higher rates of African-American residents. West Lumberton has a really significant American Indian Lumbee population. So when you kind of break it down and when you drive through town as well, you can see the difference. You can see that in West Lumberton and South Lumberton, folks are still rebuilding and it is nowhere near done. I spoke with city manager Wayne Horn, and Lumberton city manager Wayne Horn, and he essentially told me, look, we're about 35% to 40% done rebuilding homes under this large pot of FEMA money. You know, 35% to 40% is not good. Right. That means that tons of people have not had the right flood mitigation efforts put onto their homes, and they are not prepared for the next big hurricane, which, you know, I spoke with a climate scientist who essentially told me it's not a question of if, it's a question of when for the next big storm.
And that gap in the levee is important. People have been talking about what to do with that for a long time, and not much has been done, right? Tell us more about that.
Yeah, so I actually went on a tour of water structures in Lumberton, and I went with Ryan Emanuel, who is a professor at NC State, and he's a hydrologist. And he sort of took me along the levee so I could get a physical feeling of what this sort of earthen structure that borders the river, what that looks like. And as you follow the levee, all of a sudden you have this at least 100-foot wide, probably more, gap. And that is where the CSX train line goes through. And so it's really stark. It's this clear hole in the levee. And around that area are these piles of rocks and sand. And during Matthew and during Florence, water essentially backed up against the levee, and essentially creeped along the levee and then poured through that hole. Everyone is sort of aware that this hole is a massive problem. And the long-term solution is to get floodgates in place, and something that could be opened for trains but closed for floods. But I went there, and, you know, as it stands right now, it is just a hole. And in order to prevent South and West Lumberton from having the sort of dramatic floods that they had in the last couple of hurricanes, in the last two major hurricanes, you essentially need to build an emergency dam, which is made of those rocks and sand and these mesh wire sort of structures that will get stacked up along there. So it's a work in progress.
Well, near the gap in that levee is West Lumberton Baptist Church. You spoke to Pastor Rick Foreman about his memories of Hurricane Matthew.
I was standing in the parking lot here, and most of our parking lot was across the street. It was just so devastating. It looked like a war zone out here. And all I could do was cry. I was standing there in the parking lot all by myself. And the Lord spoke to me, and he told me that he was not only going to rebuild this church and use me to do it, but that one day we would thank him for the storm.
That's Pastor Rick Foreman of West Lumberton Baptist Church. I'm talking with WUNC's Laura Pelliser. So Hurricane Matthew, Laura, devastated Pastor Foreman's church, both the building and the community around it. Did that disaster become the blessing he'd hoped for?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because he said that voice of God sort of came to him, as he tells it, audibly. He heard that, and he said that he went to his congregation after hearing this message from God and said, I don't think I really want to hear this right now. You know, they were in the middle of a disaster. He did not think there would be a blessing that came from this message. But as it turned out, how Pastor Foreman describes it is that these disasters forced the church to become really integrated and really aware of the problems in the surrounding community. This is a majority white church in a very diverse neighborhood, high African American and American Indian populations. And all of a sudden, they were all sort of in the same boat. No one had water. No one could flush toilets. Many people had their homes damaged by flooding. And so the church itself became this central distribution point in West Lumberton, where folks would show up, both at the pastor's home sometimes, but also at the church, and drop off things to distribute in the neighborhood. So everything from diapers, clean clothes, food, drinking water. And now he sort of describes the church as something a little bit more resilient, as a central part of the community that essentially, during a time like COVID, they are better equipped to react to the needs of the community, to help break isolation and to support people around them.
Laura Pelliser is digital news producer for WUNC. You can see her complete story, the one she put together with the team, at our website, WUNC.org, to see more details and some photographs. Laura, thanks so much.
Thank you, Frank. I appreciate it.
North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.